The following is an encore presentation of Sam Nation.
All right, happy Friday. Here we are, 7 o'clock in the evening. The weekend is almost here. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. The number, if you want to be on the program tonight, 1-800-222-5222. And the email is sam@samnation.com. I do check that, so send me an email and I will respond if needed. Now, as always, we are here safely behind the orange curtain, live from the Sweet James Studios in an undisclosed location here in Orange County. And I will tell you, what a week. I'm getting through it. Had a quick jaunt in the middle of the week. Didn't even tell you about this. I had some meetings in Las Vegas, and so I was there midweek. By the way, Las Vegas on the weekends is terrible, right? It's the way you imagine Vegas to be. It's full of tourists, full of crazy people, drunk people, wacky people, everything. But you know, when you're there on a Tuesday to a Wednesday, it's really not bad. If you want a nice, quiet weekend in Vegas, don't go on the weekend. Go right in the middle of the week. And I remember this from when I took the bar exam. I'm licensed in Nevada, too, and I took the bar exam in Nevada. And because I was so busy at work, you know, the bar exams require, you have this insane amount of preparation. When you're preparing for this, you've got to cram so much information into your head. And if you're a smart person, it's great. But if you're me, you run into a little bit of a problem. So I'm working and I have to take this bar exam. So I said, you know, I've got to get out of town. I got to get away from the kids and the wife, and I'm going to go to Las Vegas, maybe like a week before the exam. I forget how much time I gave myself, but I ended up in Vegas for 10 days. Which was roughly a week before the exam to study. And then, you know, the 3 days or 4 days for the exam. And so I was there. That was the first time I ever went to Las Vegas during the week. And it was heavenly. I got so much studying done. I passed the exam. You know, everything was good. But I remember I was the only person at the pool who was not drinking and not really having a great time. I just had these binders, these thick, you know, we're talking like 4 or 5 inch binders of just paper and post-it notes and flashcards and everything. It's not the way to do Vegas. So anyway, I digress. But I will tell you this week, part of what really just struck a nerve with me, if I can be perfectly honest with you, is this reaction to Trump's new immigration policy. Immigration is a really important thing for me. And I really resent when I give my opinions about immigration, I think a lot of times, look, I sound like an American, right? I sound like an American. I've been here a long time, actually, from birth. And I don't necessarily have an American name, but you know, we're a melting pot, so names are all sorts. But I think that behind me and who I am is an immigrant story. I would not be here today if it weren't for the fact that my parents emigrated to this country. And so this debate about immigration is one that is deeply personal to me, not just as an American, but because of who I am as a person and why I'm here. I want to talk about that because I think I want to explain what colors my opinions and my worldview on certain subjects. And really none is more important to me than figuring out a pathway to get people here into this country, but also recognizing that we want the best possible people to be here. I am a firm believer. I am committed as committed as one can be. 100%, every fiber of my being, to an immigration policy that gives us the best people. Because there, and I'm accused of racism all the time whenever I talk about immigration, so I want to throw this out there. I want people from every country, every walk of life, of every color to come here. When we're talking about Nigeria, I want the best Nigerians. When we're talking about China, I want the best Chinese. When we're talking about, gosh forbid, Jim Acosta, Australia, I want the best Australians. And there's nothing racist about that. There's nothing bigoted about that. But it is a demand for selection. Now, my parents came here as a result of my mother being given a visa for work at a university. Many people who find a pathway to citizenship go this route. Okay, you get some job offer, you get a university offers you to come over. My mom is a PhD and is a chemist, was given a postdoctoral assignment over at Northwestern University in Illinois, in Evanston, Illinois. That happens to be where I was born a few years later after they arrived. And so the idea behind the type of visa that my mother came on was exactly what I'm talking about. It's a selective visa. It gives preference to people who are bringing some kind of talent or skill. Now, my mother, I'll lay this out for you. She's very shy and bashful about these things, probably doesn't want me talking about it. But my mother's contributions in her career, in the career that followed her immigration story, right? So from the point that she came here in 1977, I don't want to write my dad out of this story. I'm just telling you, she was the reason for the visa. So she comes here to this country, is brought here because of some skill that she's offering. She comes over, and the amount of production in her lifetime, or I would say, you know, the number of products, let me put it this way, the number of drugs that my mother has worked on and has designed affect you. If you've been to a hospital, you've used a drug that my mother has worked on. And I put this out there because that's common. That's the point of this. We want to attract people like her. We want to attract people who are going to contribute, who are going to work and further and develop and build our economy. We have to have a very honest conversation with ourselves about skilled versus unskilled labor. And this is where the liberals always lose me, because to have this kind of a conversation without emotion, without feelings, without, oh, you can't say certain things, you have to understand economics. You have to understand, and this, by the way, really shocks my friends on the left. So I want you to just hold on to your, you know, hats and glasses, because we're going to take a ride on the wild side. Different people have different value in a market economy. So different people contribute different things, and by virtue of that, are worth more or less based on that contribution. Now, this comes as a real blow to Karl Marx and yes, and all of his disciples that have followed, because that's not Marxist, you know, ideology. It certainly is not a prominent talking point of the Democratic Party. But that is the fact. We have a problem right now in this country, is that we have wage depression in unskilled labor. And if you listen to the left, if you listen to the demagoguery from the Democrats, from Hillary Clinton and others, you know, who run for national office, talk about these things about wage depression. We got to help the poor. We got to help the poor. We got to help the poor. But at the same time, advocating for unfettered, unskilled, unfiltered immigration into this country from the lower levels, from the unskilled labor market. And that's the problem. Because we have people, we have blue-collar workers that are out of work. Why in God's name would we want to import more unskilled, low-level workers? It doesn't make any sense. Why are we putting our own people, our own workers, why are they on welfare? And then at the same time, we're still we've got a floodgate open of illegal immigrants. Or even if we said, all right, we're opening the door. Legal immigration, unskilled labor. It makes no sense economically. Supply and demand. If we want to raise wages, we have to lower the number of workers that are out there. And to the extent to which the government controls that is by controlling its borders. It's controlling the number of workers that are in the marketplace. And the value of more skilled workers, unfortunately, I hate to say this, is higher. And the marketplace to some extent figures this out. But if you cannot start the process by importing more of what you don't need already, it just doesn't work that way. And so in this discussion about immigration, I think it lays bare when we saw this furious discussion between Jim Acosta and Stephen Miller earlier in the White House during that press briefing middle of the week. And the discussion about English speakers and prioritizing, because under Trump's proposal, he has a points-based system. That's what he wants. We have that essentially a little bit to some extent now, but most countries have this through and through. It's a point-based system, and you get certain points for certain desirable attributes. And the Trump administration doesn't want to just see English speakers or bust. It's just saying we're gonna give that points. We're gonna ascribe some value to that. And this is very important, because speaking the language leads to skill development, does it not? If you speak the language, if you're able to integrate, if you're able to communicate, if you're able to receive instruction, you're able to move up. It's very, very important. And the other thing is, in all of this, is I think as we've seen, and every discussion I've had with anybody that's even mildly left wing on this, immediately starts throwing out the racism label. Immediately starts criticizing me about this, and I bring up my story and I say, look, this is I'm the son of immigrants, and I remember not being able to speak English very well because my parents spoke Czech to me. And they did so in the home, and then I had to learn English in preschool, and I have some vague memories, early memories of struggling with English. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't fun. But boy, am I glad I assimilated. Can you imagine if I had grown up in an insulated community of Czech-speaking people? I don't think they really exist because there's very few of us, but I'm just picturing this. If I grew up in an insulated world where all I did was speak, okay Czech and bad English, I'd be screwed. I don't think I could become, I wouldn't have been able to become a lawyer. I would have struggled to start a business. And I certainly couldn't do this. What I love is speaking with you every night. I mean, I couldn't do it. And it brings me back to the most important thing and why I am a committed conservative. Because for conservatives want you, I want you to succeed. I want you to be self-sufficient. I want you to have the skills, the ability, and the opportunity to get ahead. But I want you to do it. I want you to take care of yourself. And the left, they want to be the reasons for the bread on the table. They want to provide your daily bread and your sustenance. And by virtue of that, the left wants people here in this country who need them. And this is why Jim Acosta is so hell-bent on this whole English thing and whole it's racism. And it's because the dirty secret is that leftists, and he's not a journalist. I mean, his argument there in the White House has nothing to do with journalism. He's a political activist. And that's okay, as long as we understand what role he's playing in all this. But in his activism is a naked and very uncomfortable truth, which is he wants, as so many leftists do, he wants a nation of dependents. He wants immigrants that need the Democratic Party to give them handouts. He wants a permanent underclass. And it's simply not an acceptable place for us to be as Americans. So when I come back, I want to address this assimilation thing, because I've had more than a few people attack me that assimilation is code for racism. And assimilation means something very, very special and particular something to me. And I want to explain that when we come back. Don't go anywhere.
Talk Radio. Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Assimilation. Assimilation. That's a big word. It's a mouthful for a number of people. And some on the left call it a dog whistle for racism. So let me tell you what this assimilation word means. And we're talking about the greater debate on immigration. And my argument, basically in a nutshell, is we should pick and choose who's here. The point of the wall is not to become a country that refuses immigrants. The point of the wall is to know who's coming through the door and to be able to be selective about who we allow in. And some of this is a purely economical argument, because we're talking about, you know, we should be able as a country to decide, hey, based on our market needs, what type of immigrants do we need? What kind of contributors do we need to our society? Do we need more unskilled labor? Do we need more skilled labor? Do we need more white-collar labor? Do we need more scientists? I mean, with Obamacare and where it's going, you've seen the doctor figures. Doctors and nurses, there are shortages. We need to be importing doctors. I mean, in other words, the federal government needs to be able to look at what is it that we need. When we look at the Department of Labor, what do we need? And we should be getting more of those type of people. But the point is we need to have the decision-making power to do it. Now, assimilation is the process. This is what happens after immigration. And it is the most important part of an immigrant's life. And it's one that's actually very challenging. I will tell you one thing. Now, I was born here. My parents came here in 77, about 3 years before I was born. And I will tell you an interesting fact about me. Well, it's not a fact, but it's this thing that I've recognized about myself over the years. When I am here, when I'm in Irvine, where I live, or anywhere in the U.S., there's something about me that's very European. You know, I feel to some extent like I identify with my parents' heritage. And then when I am in Europe, when I was, you know, a few weeks ago, I was in the Czech Republic, as you may remember, and I'm there and I feel American. You know, I'm painfully aware of just how totally American I am. And I'll say this too, my language, my Czech is good enough to where I can pretty much hide in Prague. I mean, in the big cities, nobody can really tell that I'm from somewhere else. So I am a bicultural person. But assimilation should not be a dirty word for giving up your culture and throwing in the towel and this demand by America that you give up your culture and that you that you strip yourself of everything that is your heritage. It's not that. My parents took assimilation very seriously. They came here and they already spoke English. And then when they got here, they certainly kicked it into high gear. And I mean, they both had careers at universities and in biotech. So in the pharmaceutical industry. So, I mean, they spoke, their English is excellent. But it's more than that. You don't want to put yourself outside of the culture that you live in. You want to succeed. You don't want to be an outlier somewhere hidden out of you. You want to do everything you can to jump on the moving train that is your new country. And it feels very much, I'll tell you this, if you're not an immigrant and you're listening to me and you're kind of wondering about it, it does feel like jumping on a moving train. It is something completely different. And there is a language barrier that's painful. But it's important to embrace it. And successful immigrants do. That's the key. And I don't know why we don't celebrate that success. I really don't. Let me tell you what I mean about that. We got a cut here for John Wolfe. He's got some important news. And then we'll be back with more. Don't go anywhere.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC, bottom of the hour, and the weekend is almost here, live from the Sweet James Studios in an undisclosed location on the right side. Get it? The right side of the Orange Curtain. By the way, if you're new to Orange County, if you're new to Orange, LA County, you don't know what the Southland thing is all about. There was an Iron Curtain, made very famous as a term coined by Winston Churchill in a speech after World War II, where he talked about the Eastern Bloc, the influence of the Soviet Union descending upon a greater part of Eastern Europe, and so this the Iron Curtain became a metaphor. For Soviet, you know, dominance in this sort of sealed off part of Europe. And the joke, of course, is that Orange County is very conservative, as opposed to all you good people in Santa Monica. And so we have this, you know, metaphorical orange curtain that separates us from all you loonies up north. Not always true. We have pockets of lunacy here. In Orange County as well. And they're all, it's always the, damn you liberals. Man, you always have the prettiest places. Why is that? Laguna? Laguna Beach. Totally liberal. If you're listening to me in Laguna and you agree with what I'm saying, I know you're hiding. You're hiding right now. You don't want to let anybody know that you listen to Sam Nation because you'd get kicked out of any decent dinner party on your block. But San Francisco, it's got to be one of the prettiest countries, prettiest cities in the world. And totally left-wing crazy. Oh, we say I was right with the country, calling it a country. Well, that's true. I mean, all of California wants to succeed. Have you been following this? Apparently, the effort for California to break off from the rest of the union is picking up steam. It's not going to happen, but it's hilarious to watch. What else have I been enjoying? Oh, my goodness. Did you see this Newsweek cover? The Newsweek, I didn't realize, are they still printing? They're not printing anything, are they? They don't have actually a paper cover. But they are they? Do you know? I don't think they have anything in print anymore. But they put out a cover on Newsweek with Trump on it. Have you seen this? The picture of Trump on Newsweek has him sitting in a very comfortable looking leather chair. And I believe, well, the title underneath him, sort of some writing right around his crotch. He's sitting there kind of facing the front and he's in a suit and he looks really comfortable. He's holding a remote control, sitting in this big couch-like chair, big armchair, and says, Lazy Boy. So I don't know if this is a Lazy Boy. I don't have a Lazy Boy at home, but if I did, I would if they look like this. So the Trump looks really comfortable. And it says, under Lazy Boy, it says, Donald Trump is bored and tired. Imagine how bad he'd feel if he did any work. Oh, Robbie says they're back in print. Newsweek is back in print. Well, whoa, what's my reaction to this cover? My reaction to the cover has nothing to do with what it claims. You know, I mean, because it's absurd. I mean, Trump's achieved quite a bit. And the left, by the way, is furious about it already. I mean, he's put Gorsuch on the court. He's pulled out of the Paris Accord. Keystone Pipeline has been unblocked. He's totally dismantled Obama's Clean Power Plan. Where do I go? Oh, the EPA? I mean, that thing's getting just, you know, dynamited, basically, by the minute. Arctic drilling is back on. The economy's booming. The VA, do you know that he's fired more than 500 people from the VA? But that's not really, I don't really want to refute their title that he's bored and that he hasn't done anything. I want to tell you what he has in his hands. What he's holding, that there's something in this image that just blows my mind. Blows my mind. And I'll still talk a little bit about immigration, too. I don't want to leave that just yet. You don't want to miss this. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
Talk Radio, Rock Radio. 790 KABC.
All right, Sam Rogowski here. The roadways are filled with all sorts of people. Now, given that California is a sanctuary state, and I don't know if you've been following the news, ICE recently has been cracking down here, and the state of California is actually kicking ICE officers out of state buildings. Great stuff, guys. Great stuff. Bang up job you're doing. And of course, the feds now are retaliating in kind by pulling some funding. You heard about that? You know, one of the byproducts of this whole, turn your blind eye to illegal immigration, it's a problem. It creates a gray market out there, both in labor, but also you've got a lot of people driving who, you know, yeah, maybe they've got a driver's license, but a lot of them are not insured. This is a dirty truth. And it's, again, for some people, hard to hear. So, one of the greatest nightmares out there is getting hit by an uninsured driver. It is. And by the way, it's certainly a lot of people who are legal that are also not insured. Basically, stupid people exist of all walks of life who don't have insurance. They're out there, they're driving, they're doing crazy stuff. Usually people don't have insurance because why? Why? Oh, they got into accidents and they got dropped by their insurers. So, if you got hit by somebody who doesn't have insurance, call Sweet James. You got to get some good advice. Got to have somebody take you through that. Don't fight that battle on your own. You may have to go to your own insurance company. And by the way, don't do that on your own. Don't call your own insurance company and start seeing if they can help you. Bad news. Call attorney Sweet James Bergner, the lawyer we trust, to handle your personal injury needs. His phone number, memorize this. Keep this close. Carry this. Get a tattoo. I think it's a great idea. Not usually an advocate of inking, but this is for a worthy cause. 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. All right. I don't know if Sweet James appreciates me tying in illegal immigration into his ads. He probably doesn't. But thank goodness he's patient with me. Not every advertiser would be. I think that explains why he's stuck with me for so long. Very patient man and a good man through and through. I can attest to that. So I was telling you about the Newsweek cover. This cover, it's got Trump and a lazy boy. It says on the title, lazy boy, he's got nothing done. Kind of the premise of the article. And he's sitting in the lazy boy. He's got, is it, Yeah, it is. It's a crotch shot. I mean, he's just got his, legs spread out. He looks cozy. He's sitting there very, just very bored. And the title says he's bored, and he's in the Lazy Boy. But here's the part of it that that I think is most important. Now, I am not necessarily the greatest fast food expert, but what do I spy here in his lap? They've got him sitting. He's got a remote control in his hand. And he's got a what looks like a bag of Cheetos, a takeout bag, is that Carl's or McDonald's? You can't really tell. But it's definitely Cheetos, right? It's Cheetos, and then he's got a Diet Coke. Cheetos, some fast food, and a Diet Coke. Oh, and by the way, the bag of Cheetos is huge. So you know what I might take away is stupid, flippin' leftists. You guys in the media still don't get it, do you? I remember during the campaign, there a picture circulating of Trump on his private jet eating a giant bucket of KFC. Do you remember this? He was sitting there with a big gulp and a giant bucket of KFC, and he got mocked. Har, 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 har. What a oaf. What a rube. What a meathead. You stupid people at Newsweek, you're making fun of most of America. Most Americans sit down in a Lazy Boy, if they can afford one in this economy, sit down in a Lazy Boy and eat Cheetos and eat fast food and drink Diet Coke. You just managed to, you just offended my own wife. She drinks Diet Coke. You guys are geniuses. You keep this up. Keep this brilliant work up, and Trump will end up in there for 8 years. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, making radio great again here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. At the bottom of the hour, right before the news break, I was talking about immigration. And kind of wondering why we don't celebrate all the immigrants that jump on the moving train that is the process of coming to a new country, that jump on that moving train and succeed. And I'm hearing, I've gotten some responses here from you that, you know, we do, Sam. But let me give you one example of where we don't. The state of California goes out of its way. Have you been to the DMV? How many different languages do we have our DMV forms in? Do you think that that's how it is in the Czech Republic, in Germany? I mean, there's an expectation there that if you're at the DMV and you want to have to obtain a government service or a government benefit, that you're going to speak the language. There's an expectation that you can read the road signs. Heaven forbid. And I look, you know, whenever I'm at the DMV and I see, you know, I see all the different languages, or when I'm voting and I'm looking at my voter registration pamphlet and I see all the different languages. Do you know what I think? I look at that and I go, wow, this is so patronizing. This is a bunch of do-good liberals saying to immigrants, you can't really learn English. You don't really need to learn English. We'll just make it easy for you. And I can't tell you how many immigrants who have learned English that I know, first generation immigrants, people that, you know, are here and that look at that and it just boils their blood. It boils their blood. Because they look at this as some sort of, I mean, that's exactly it. They look at that as a reduced expectation. Condi Rice, you know, when she talked about this whole thing ties really into affirmative action too. It's the soft bigotry of lower expectations. The idea that we look at one group of people and we say, well, you know, shoot, you need a few extra points over here because you can't do this on your own. I don't know of anything more racist. And so when I open up these language pamphlets and these instruction pamphlets on something and I see all these different languages in them, I go, wow, boy, am I glad that I was raised by my parents who said, no, we're learning English, kid. Because I would not want to be some forgotten minority group speaking a minority language on the outskirts of society, being excluded from participating in our economy, in our cultural life, and in our greater society. But I fear that that really is the plan of the left, that the left wants us all in little groups and segregated, like I said yesterday, because that keeps us dependent on them. You need the government, right? If you can't fend for yourself, you need Uncle Sam. And I'm not talking about me. You need Nancy Pelosi. You need Chuck Schumer. You need Barack Obama. You know who I think you need? You know why? This is what sums it up. I think you need you. You need you. You need you to be your best self. And this is the country where dreams come true. This is the country where anything is possible. But you have to be the best you. And that's it. Have a great weekend. Back on Monday. Cannot wait. We'll be right back.